4. Number 16A.
We had analyzed the chapter on animal magnetism in the way that Mrs. Eddy presents it, giving us the analysis of the Antichrist in it. But naturally, every time we have a presentation of the negative, we can, through the law of reversal, also use the positive. Therefore, I like to think about animal magnetism after having analyzed it in a positive way and just put it into the terms of the synonymous terms and see the Christ of the synonymous terms. So, can you see, what is animal magnetism? Animal magnetism is to go out from another standpoint than the seven synonymous term. This is always animal magnetism, whatever we do then. No matter good intentions, bad intentions. It is therefore nothing else than to believe in a belief and to accept the belief as real. Whereas from the positive point of view, I could see, and I would go through the seven synonymous terms, and I would see that the only power that there is at work is actually mind, so that all that there is going on is mind's influence. So that I see that I'm only under the influence of the one divine mind. There is no other influence influencing me. I think if you see that and entertain that consciousness, one is no more under the influence of influenza. One has no more flu every year once or twice, because influenza is just it's really what Mesmer has been seeing, that there is an influence that comes from the world and is influencing us. But here we have only the influence of the one mind. From the point of view of spirit, we can see that that influence from the one mind at the point of spirit is the only reality, that we are influenced by the reality of being, the only reality of being, that that influence is always positive and not a negation. So that I am constantly under that stream, under those floods of spirit, bringing to me only the positive realities of being. Then in soul I can see that there is only one influence going on, the influence of soul, therefore only that which is straightforward, which is definite, which is sinless, which is blessing us, so that I have no malicious animal magnetism around me, nor am I being attacked by malicious animal magnetism. I am constantly flooded by the sinlessness of soul, by the blessing of soul. And I just feel that I am constantly blessed. Principle will tell me that I am under the influence of the ever-operative treatment and practice of that principle. That I am under a constant treatment, so to say, that principle constantly is practicing me, that principle constantly gives me a Christian Science treatment, a very good one, because it's principle, and so actually always is treating me according to the highest good. If I look out from life, I can see that only life influences me. Nothing that can harm me influences me. That there is therefore always a constructive sense that comes to me, and I feel the pouring in of the constructive, elevating, exalting influence of life. Or you go to truth and you see that we are only under the influence of truth, therefore under the influence of righteousness, of that which is right, which acts according to that which is right and true. I am constantly under that influence of the great justice and great judge, under the theodicy of Christian Science and not under the theodicy of theology. That theodicy of Christian Science, which only shows the true action of God, where God never acts through something that is erroneous or wrong. So I feel that truth is influencing me with all that is right and true, and thereby establishing within me the true man. Or from the point of view of love, I can see that love influences me constantly in the nature of love. Therefore, it always only sanctifies me as the blessed of God, the sanctified of God, that I am never less than love's own expression, which means never less than the perfect state of being. So that perfection just pours down on me. If I don't believe that, I believe in animal magnetism. If I believe that love is not pouring down infinite perfection, I believe in animal magnetism. That's simple as that. I believe in another blessing, in another pouring. The pouring of curse and of imperfection and of enmity and hate and jealousy and competition and I don't know what. Whereas if I really stick with the synonymous term, then I feel as if I would be under the abundance, the floods of abundance of perfection. Yeah, in this way I handle animal magnetism. Handling animal magnetism is not fighting against animal magnetism. Handling animal magnetism is no warfare, no contest. And handling animal magnetism is going out from the synonymous term. That's all. Then you handle. Then you handle what? That we go out from another standpoint. Again, we can see that there is only one evil, the evil one. There's only one way of handling animal magnetism. We don't need to know a lot of tricks and rules how to handle animal magnetism. Just can you see how on the horizontal in your matrix in the prayer it said that there is only one prayer. That one prayer that says, deliver me from the evil one. So you establish there your proposition of the word. In the Christ, on that horizontal comes animal magnetism, which says, all right, how do I deliver myself from the evil one? There is only one animal magnetism, generic animal magnetism. How do I deliver myself from that? By going out from God, from the synonymous term, and see that that God translates itself always only as ideas of God and never as anything else. So I can, you see, just handle all the claims of animal magnetism through one law, namely the Christ law. We come to the next chapter, Science, Theology and Medicine. The chapter which Mrs. Eddy has written as the lost chapter, as late as 1891, she added that chapter and thereby completed the whole matrix in the textbook. Now she had all the chapters except fruitage, but within the structure she had now all chapters. At that time she put it as the first chapter into the textbook, and reading the chapter one can see that this seems to be very logical, because she begins that chapter with that statement about when, and she has discovered Christian Science. She begins there where the discovery happened and says that in the year 1866 I discovered the Christ Science, or the divine laws of life, truth and love, and named my discovery Christian Science. She didn't name it divine science or just science itself. What was discovered and revealed to her were really the laws, how life, truth and love are the savior to all the various problems on the material and human plane. So she depicted really the levels of absolute Christian Science and Christian Science in their interrelationship. The question that the reader may always ask is, why did she discover Christian Science? Why not somebody else? Why not a man? This is one of the stumbling blocks for many men, But they don't like that the woman has discovered Christian Science. After all the big scientists were men: Galilei, Newton, Kepler, and so on, Lavoisier, and whatever their name was. Actually, I don't think that up to Madame Curie we had great women scientists and discoverers, except that Mrs. Eddy, before Madame Curie, conceived of this Christ Science. And perhaps one is asking oneself, why did she? Why not somebody else? This is always a great question one asks, say, why was it Einstein that discovered the theory of relativity? Why not somebody else? And there is always a reason that certain people are more transparent for a new idea than others. Because fundamentally, you know that the divine mind revealing itself does not know any person. It is absolutely unaware of people. So the divine mind never knew a woman called Mrs. Eddy. The divine mind only knows its own ideas and its own qualities, and therefore can reveal itself there where the qualities are present which are necessary for that revelation. Mrs. Eddy must have had qualities that enabled her to be receptive for that very revelation. And you can see that very easily, that looking into the lives of other, say, religious leaders, religious figures of great import, saints, and so on, why didn't it come to them? And I can see that it was really Mrs. Eddy who, right from the beginning, somehow always knew that she would once write a book on the divine mind, on the science of God, right from the beginning. In other words, she was open, so to say, as one has never seen it before, she was open to that possibility that God could be represented and taught through a science. This was unknown to the saints. They would never have loved that idea. For the great religious character, they believed in faith, they believed in grace, but they never dared to say, I can understand God, or we should be able to understand God, or there is a way to understand God, or even to say that God has a means how to interpret himself to us so that we can learn God. These were questions that Mrs. Eddy have asked, as we know from her biography, right from her earlier youth. She always had that feeling in herself that once she will be writing a book, and with that book she didn't quite know what kind of book, but she knew in which line, namely about the nature of God as a science. That whole period was really prepared for that. If you read books on that period, as well here in America as in Europe, you feel that the writers of that period, you see, it fell into that period where the essence of mesmerism, the essence of hypnotism, the essence of that there is a mental realm that can be discovered and researched was very much in the forefront of the thinkers here and in Europe. And we have in Europe, just as you have here, many who before Mrs. Eddy were speaking about a Christian science. The term Christian science is not something that she used for the first time. There was a whole atmosphere in New England, especially, and over in Germany, with that were beginning to speak that there must be a science that is Christian, and called it, we need a Christian science. So Mrs. Eddy must have been specially prepared to receive the idea of that Christian science. The same thing happens today. Quite often when I read now thinkers in the field of physics, and especially in the field of physics and mathematics, that they again ask for a Christian science. not knowing that there exists already a Christian Science, but they still see that science must be coupled now with ethics, with moral values, with the values that are really worthwhile living, and they see that science must be Christian, must be wedded to Christianity or to religion, and call it, demand it, a Christian Science. So, denominating our discovery Christian Science is a denomination. It's not something that can be, say, made one's own property and say Christian Science belongs to the Christian Scientists. It is a factor in being that science without Christianity just doesn't seem to be any more science because it doesn't work. It destroys people. It destroys the world. What is it that made Mrs. Eddy ready for the discovery? She speaks in the introductory paragraph of this chapter very clearly. She says that she herself asked the question, where did it come from, this revelation? Why was I chosen to give it? And she said, therefore she asked the question, whence came to me, this heavenly conviction? A conviction antagonistic to the testimony of the physical senses, antagonistic to the concept of science in the 19th century. So where did it come from, she says? And she says, it was the gift of the grace of God, given unto me by the effectual working of his power. So her answer is that it was a gift of God, a gift of grace, quoting Paul. That's Paul's quotation, meaning by this that she was chosen by the working of the divine power, not by her own merits, but the working of the divine power. And in speaking about this gift of grace, she says in this introductory paragraph also that she says, God had been graciously preparing me during many years for the reception of this final revelation of the absolute divine principle of scientific mental healing. You see, she gives here a sense that the revelation doesn't come just unprepared, just out of the blue. It always seems that a discovery comes right out of the blue because the discoverer just suddenly in one split second sees the answer. So it is a split second revelation, but this is only possible because that discoverer has been preparing himself over years and years with arduous work and trying to get hold of the fundamentals of his subject, that only that preparatory work really laid the ground in which the seed could fall and take root. You know, today so often we now read in various articles in the magazines and so on this interesting phenomena that more and more when the great discoverers in the field of any science are asked how did they arrive at the discovery? Was it through pure logical reasoning or was there also intuition at work? And apparently most of them, over 80%, say that there was intuition at work and that it was a moment of intuition that showed them the solution. So we can misunderstand that, and it is being misunderstood and misused then, saying all what we need is intuition, because intuition has been that means through which a great discovery has been made. And you have all those wonderful examples within the last 100 years, so to say, where one can show that all these great discoveries were made through intuition, in a dream, in sleep, at the point of waking up in the morning where one is in a state of half sleep, half awake. Discoveries were made through looking at something and by association of thought, were suddenly made aware of a solution, Well, this can be misleading, because then we say, all right, we do not need any more reasoning, we do not any more the culturing of our fundamentals, the training with our fundamentals, the exercise of our fundamentals. All what we need is to have an intuitive sense, and it all comes through inspiration, and all what is necessary is inspiration. And forget what? Exactly what Mrs. Eddy wants to show here. She got it freely, right out from heaven, as a gift of grace, but she was, through many years, graciously prepared for that gift of grace, and was willing to let herself be prepared for that. And that is what we have to see, that we too are able, and that's our actually true nature, the true nature of man, that he's a revelator, that he sees always new revelations. That's his proper right. It is not the proper right of a Mrs. Eddy to be the revelator, and after her, nobody is any more allowed to see her, to get the revelation. She was the revelator, and that's that, and that's the end of it, and finished. God is dead at that moment. If you take that attitude that Mrs. Eddy was the revelator, there is no more revelator, then we can equate that with God is dead. Because the very nature of God is that he reveals himself. A God that does not reveal himself is dead, because that's his mission. So if we see that, then we see it's the birthright of man to be a revelator. But just sitting here and say, I'm a revelator, and I want to be a revelator, and I wish I were a revelator, and as a revelator I would have quite a great esteem, does nothing but to take the whole mortal mind, subconscious, and build it up so that it, at one moment it comes to the conscious, and then that revelation is just silly stuff. Huh? Just silly stuff. It's new, nobody has voiced that, but it's only silly stuff. The subconscious has that come up. Whereas what Mrs. Eddy wants to show here, let's ourselves prepared graciously over years and years and years, so that we have within our consciousness a finely cultured sense of the fundamentals of being. And that those finely cultured fundamentals of being are living within us. That they are living realities. That they are not just meditating realities, but living realities. Not realities where we sit back and just contemplate them. That's necessary. But there is more than that. And that's why she shows that her whole gracious preparedness, oh, that's too bad, huh? To be graciously prepared, she really went through those first five chapters in her life, through prayer, atonement, Eucharist, marriage, spiritualism, animal magnetism, and went right through those phases, and then was graciously prepared, was transparent enough to receive the discovery. So we know that Mrs. Eddy, even as a child, would go seven times a day, go back into her little room and pray. Prayer was for her just the milk of the day. She fed on prayer as a child already. She took it very sincere, must have had quite a good sense of prayer, because when it came to the point of atonement and Eucharist, when as a child of about 15 or 16, she should be confirmed, she was challenging the theology of her church, and was challenging her father. And apparently that was not an easy thing, to challenge that kind of father. And so we know she had fever, very high fever, and nearly passed on at that time, through that terrific struggle, atonement and Eucharist, that terrific struggle to stick up to her principle against the whole dogma of the church, and against the authority of a grown-up, against the authority of her father. And she won through. She never gave in. She didn't make a concession there. Or you can see that then she really went through the belief of marriage and had to see what it is, and that to see both sides of it, or mostly the better sides of it, the worse sides of it, but still always trying to give the best to it and trying to save that situation. Every marriage she tried to save as well as she could, putting in the best she had to save it, until, as she says, that the ship may go down, and so he was single. But she went through it. She didn't just go into it, and then when it didn't turn out the way she expected it, just threw it overboard, but she was sticking to the wreck as long as she could, and therefore building up a very high sense of humanhood, putting in the best of the human she could. In that period then she had to meet the claim of spiritualism. It was around about 1884-5 when Davies was putting forth for the first time the theory of spiritualism and wrote all those books about the messages from the other world. And so spiritualism swept over America and very soon over Europe. It was like a prairie fire, and Mrs. Eddy stood up against it, though she was mediumistically unlocked. What does that mean? She had a mediumistic trait of character. Though she had that, and though she could have played all the tricks of spiritualism, she didn't do it. She stood up against it because she began to see that this is not the answer. Then she met that very great challenge of being interested in Quimbyism, because she had quite big help from Quimby, and therefore one could see that she would be interested in Quimby and support him, what she wanted to do at the beginning, until she saw through animal magnetism too. Then she was free, really, to present or to be used as a transparent mentality for the revelation of God.